So what I want to talk about today is some of the three or four short line teachings that have made a difference for me. Not all of them, but it was fun to think about what were the most mind-blowing teachings that I received, and they happened to come as like short kind of lines. And I also realized that in a way it's like three or four things all saying the same from different traditions, which is cool and also not surprising, but I liked that. It's also speaking in response to our continuation from the talk last time, where when we hear words, I was reading from Seng Tsan, the verses of Faith Mind, or we could say like a poem about trust to make it more to the point. And the text is saying, only cease to cherish opinions. Don't seek for the truth, only cease to cherish opinions. And someone in between had a question about that, saying, well, why should it be that there's something that we have to struggle about? Why shouldn't it just be that naturally we know the truth? Naturally, naturally the pea plant climbs up to the top of the string. The potential is fulfilling itself. Why should we assume that there's a problem? Why should we believe this guy from so many centuries ago that there's a problem? And she said, the person who had the question said, I'm coming from a Catholic background where the Catholicism came in as with a lot of cultural strictness. So they were living in France, but the family, big family. And in France, lunch or the midday meal goes on for hours. So you finish the different parts of the meal and then you have maybe cheese and or a piece of fruit and then et cetera, et cetera. And the children were required to sit there the whole time. I couldn't believe it. Because in Spain, they also have this, the lunches just go on forever. When my family from the United States comes to visit, they're like, okay, we finished the meal, let's have the coffee and go. And then even for the person who's serving the table to come and ask if we want coffee, for them, they're giving us the time that we deserve to have at the table instead of giving us bad service. And come on, let's go. So the children, all seven of them, had to stay sitting at the table properly. And so for her, her experience of Catholicism was like that. So she doubts the idea that there's something intrinsically wrong with us as part of that package that you have to sit for 3 hours at the lunch table while the adults have another slice of cheese. And I was surprised that she took it that way. Only cease to cherish opinions. Do not seek the truth. Because for me, it's saying the opposite of what she heard. Like for me, it's saying, because of our the layers of conditioning that tell us that we should have an opinion, because of those layers only, we're missing. We're not in contact with the truth. And only when all we have to do is that simple, not easy, but simple thing of feeling what else there is other than opinion, other than talking and thinking. And already we don't, there's nothing else to do. There's no other need to search for anything else. So in response to that line of questioning, perhaps also this idea came for this talk of what has actually been important to me in all the teachings I received. And maybe I would get different answers another day. But the first thing that came to mind was a teaching of one Tibetan teacher. And I don't know how widely it spreads across Tibetan Buddhism, but he talks about the basic goodness of things, including ourselves. Basic goodness. And especially pointing out basic goodness even in things that we don't find beautiful. So being susceptible, being able to cultivate a space or a consciousness or a mindset or an open heart where we could receive the beauty of something that we don't think is pretty. And this teacher worked with, also, though he was Tibetan Buddhist, he studied Japanese flower arranging, the Zen art, as a spiritual practice. And so he could see a dead branch and see or feel how that fit into, or that was calling to be part of an arrangement of three pieces. Even if the dead branch, well, it's a dead, is dead. What is there good about it, kind of. But then sometimes I start to wonder if, in a way, the easy part is to see, to receive the beauty of something we don't think is pretty. Because what we do think is beautiful, sometimes I think the layers that come in between could be harder to actually see through, to really be available to the beauty of something that we think is beautiful. Might be even more challenging than to be available to the beauty of what we don't. So that tree stump there that someone cut off before we got here, just behind Mary. In a way, if we just have the idea that we could receive the beauty of that, it's not so far away. It's kind of easy. Ah, yes, and there's the contact. But if we would look up at the cliffs or the horses or the prayer flags or whatever, something that we have we've already tied a knot about beauty to that perception. It might be harder because there's not the contrast of like, ugh, tree stump, ah, beauty. We don't have that contrast to work with to land in the openness. So what this Tibetan teaching talks about is actively opening, actively practicing, being in that state. Or it might not be a state, just as we were just before this talk speaking about gender. Maybe there's not just two options, but many different ways of being open to the basic goodness of things and of ourselves. But they talk specifically about basic goodness accessible in perception, in sense perception. So sound, sight, touch, taste, smell. Got it, all five of them. And I would just simply recommend the sense of touch for that. Because we would easily go to sight and sound, so that's easy. That's easy to practice, but we could not forget, not neglect the sense of touch with the tree stump, with our finger or nail or whatever. So even now I was doing a course with this woman, Bonnie Bainbridge Cohen, who is inspiring the connected movement that we're doing with her work called Embodied Anatomy. And she, just one time in a course, she said, okay, feel the difference between touching your tooth with your fingernail and touching your fingernail with your tooth. Mm-hmm. And as soon as she said that in the room, the whole atmosphere just dropped in. Mm-hmm. Because we were giving our sensitivity to the world of touch in a clear way. Not because it's important to know how to do that. No, this is the touch. This is the tooth touching the fingernail. And that's the fingernail touching the tooth. Just for the sensitivity to be awake in the world of the realm of touch. As an especially vital part of our awakening as human beings. And there's one line that stayed with me that I never met this one teacher, only except in books, which of course were then compiled and edited by his students. So it's this teacher and his whole collective body of co-teachers, his students, that I'm in touch with. he talks about drawing down the power of vastness in a single perception. I remember when I read that line in the year 2000. After finding this amazing book in a bookstore in Varanasi called Dharma Art.
Can you say it one more time?
Drawing down the power of vastness in a single perception. And then what's interesting is it's not then stopping in that one perception, trying to draw down the vastness, but feeling how in any simple anything, any simple thing, which then is another simple thing one moment later. So without getting complicated about it, a cloud, okay, but the cloud has already changed, but I can still be seeing the cloud. And just as the power of awake sensitivity in the realm of touch is important, I think it's really good to bring our human intelligence awake to the area of food. And here we get to have the chance of noticing that food takes up a part of the day. It's not just a 5 minutes at the desk while I'm doing something else here. In these teachings, they even talk about how it could be to even see food and not only just relate to it as food, or to see dirt and not only just relate to it as dirt. That we could be aware that that's a filter that's coming in my perception of that quinoa. And so I could still be very clever and know that that is food that I'm going to eat, and at the same time be open to something more bare, a more bare perception, a more wide world. And this brings in this word clever, which often in Open Dharma we would speak of cleverness as something that gets in the way. But the second kind of teaching line that came to my mind for this talk is really two lines from Jesus, and he supposedly, again, it was probably that person and as well as his co-teachers who were his students, and then several generations before it got put on paper. The famous line, the first shall be last, the last shall be first, and then another line that I thought was really famous until I realized I had it all wrong. I thought it was be as cunning as a fox and as gentle as a lamb or a dove. I wasn't sure if it was a lamb or a dove, so I looked it up, and it's be innocent as a dove and as shrewd as a snake, as snakes, not only one snake, but snakes, not foxes.
What does shrewd?
Shrewd would be where you're looking for your own benefit. You are calculating. So this teaching is saying to be innocent and calculating, or to be innocent and to be worldly. To be innocent and to strike when it's time to strike. And to just swallow whole when it's time to swallow whole. And I like the fox as an image, but the snake is also amazing because we have no, as a snake, we have no hands or legs to kind of deliberate over, to think about, to decide. It's just the spine. A spine and a stomach and a mouth is what it is. And we have to recover that snakiness. And I almost think that the two kind of categories of the realm of touch and the realm of food might go along here with the realm of dove and the realm of snake. Because dove gives us a very good, I find, image of what can happen when we really enter the world of touch without filters or with fewer filters. When we really just let our sensitivity to touch happen with less and less getting in between, with less and less description coming in. it can very much open up an experience of that feathery softness and kind of fluffiness. It's a bit of a fluffy bird. It's not too fluffy, but it's a soft, fat bird. It's not a hoopoe. A hoopoe has more beak and more decoration on the head. And very kind of edible, very yummy. So they're just down the valley, they're doing a program where they are breeding the native species of bird or the native variety of dove for this area to release them so that the eagles have more food. But the doves themselves are incredibly beautiful, and just seeing them from a distance, the feeling that comes through the eyes of those feathers very much communicates what can happen when we start to enter touch, the basic goodness of touch. And what stops us from entering the basic goodness of touch is the fear that we would just be the dove that's eaten by the eagle, and that the only reason we've been raised is to be food for the eagle or the snake. And so we don't let ourselves fully, often we have been trained or learned from bad experiences, that that's dangerous, to be that soft and feathery. And so Jesus told his people, he was sending them out to teach, and he said, don't worry about what to say. At that time, you will be given what to say. So that's like the innocent as dove part, where we don't have to worry about the realm of thinking and talking and opinion, because that's not what we will be communicating at that time. So whenever there's a need to speak, it will be given to us. We don't have to already have the opinion and then try to stake it into the ground at the time that we're called upon to speak. There could be this innocence, the not knowing in advance. There could be an innocence and the feathery softness that in the moment that it is time to speak, there's a being given what to say. But the shrewd as snakes part, seems to be not spiritual. It seems to be that we're supposed to leave the shrewdness, the thinking, the calculating, the cleverness behind in order to be in this soft spirituality, this sensitivity, this opinionlessness. This basic goodness. But this is where what we spoke about last time in with Kabir's words of dropping limits, dropping both limits and not limits. We're beyond measure. So I want to talk a little bit more about this shrewdness or cunning, or how is it that we get what we need? So food, how do we just not get to be food for someone else and still be soft? And how could we be a snake and not be disempowered or overpowered by the calculating and the having an eye for what we need? So I want to throw in another line from later in the second half of this Song of Trust Mind by Sengsan. When movement stops, there is no movement, and when no movement, there is no stopping. When such dualities, such as movement and stopping, movement, no movement, when such dualities cease to exist, oneness itself cannot exist. I will, but I'll finish it first. To this ultimate state, no law or description applies. So first, it's just is kind of making some territory, like staking out some territory where we can say we're obviously talking about what seem to be paradoxes, what seem to be opposites. But there is a realm, and it's the human realm, where opposites can and do exist. I almost want to say only together. When movement stops, there is no movement. And when no movement, there is no stopping. When such dualities cease to exist, oneness itself cannot exist. So sometimes we have been in a state that felt like love, or it felt like dove, it felt like innocence, it felt like we were receiving, we were in touch with the basic goodness of things and ourselves. But sometimes we expect that state, there's still a filter of a mental filter where we expect that state of openness to be good, to be what we think of as good. So when they say basic goodness, they're not saying good, bad goodness. They're saying yum, beyond good, bad, beyond pretty, ugly, beyond like, not like. And so it can easily happen, it does easily happen, that we're in an open state and we don't realize we're shutting out certain signals or kind of exchange or communication that would come in and would be discerning. It would actually walk away from that situation and walk towards that other situation. Not because I like that situation and I don't like the other one, but it simply would move away. It would be moved away. Or in relationship, we might feel, oh, wow, I'm in this amazing state and I'm being so loving. And then there starts to be this idea of loving that we're loyal to, instead of the loyalty to openness. Instead of loyalty to not opinion or to basic goodness. In the basic goodness, it's as if we could see the cleverness or the shrewdness in that practice of the arrangement of flowers or dead branches. That already from the beginning, you know a dead branch may be included. And this is a clue. Already from the beginning, what normally would be kept out by law, ugly, dead, whatever, we're doing beauty things here, you're ugly, already from the beginning is included. So already, we're from the beginning, we don't believe the separation, we don't believe the duality. Then we're not trying to be loyal to oneness. We're not subtly trying to create and bring into existence a state of oneness. When such dualities cease to exist, movement, not movement, movement stopping, oneness itself cannot exist. To this ultimate state, no law or description applies. So one clue for the shrewdness with the innocence is a good protection is to include what seems negative from the beginning. It's happened to me many times where I entered a spiritual scene and I assumed that in myself was only what we call good intentions, and I assumed that in everyone else was what we call so-called good intentions, that we all wanted each other to be enlightened, basically. And that was the only reason that we were there. And if you've been part of any spiritual scene at all, it's like every other human scene. And there is everything. And there are people who are in the spiritual scene and they don't know that they're there for political reasons, and there are the people who are in the spiritual scene and they know that they're there because they want power or whatever. There's everything. And what kept happening to me as clinging to the ideal of innocence and fluffiness and only the dove, was being shocked again and again by what is completely unshocking, what is completely to be expected when there are human beings together. So this week, Gyan has chosen stories off the shelf that we have some stories that are classic Greek myths told for children, Shakespearean stories told for children, and Chaucer's tales told for children. And he chose some of those stories from those books. And every single story that came had jealousy in it. Jealousy was actually the reason. So when we have the story of Icarus and Daedalus, and what we usually talk about the story of Icarus and Daedalus is don't be too proud and don't fly too close to the sun or your wings will melt and you'll fall to the sea and die. But the beginning of the story was left out of the way that we remember the story. The beginning of the story is that Daedalus, the father of Icarus, was jealous of his nephew, because his nephew happened to be a genius as a child and invented the saw and the compass and something else. And Daedalus was a master craftsman, but he hadn't invented anything like that. And so when he was asked to build a big temple, he pushed his nephew Talos from the temple and killed to his death. And so in the way the story, if you have the whole story, it's his envy of his nephew that is the downfall of himself and his son. The story goes on, but today it's not important. It's interesting that we don't remember the jealousy, the envy part of the Icarus-Daedalus story. We remember poor Icarus, who's entangled in a web of family karma, and because of his father's misdeed, falls to his death. So we might be more aware of comparing mind and the dangers of that inside and outside. And assume that it will be present and include it from the beginning. And not let any emotional reaction to the fact of comparing mind get in the way of life's movement of us towards what we need, where life innocently moves us, snakily moves us towards what is needed. So I want to just briefly mention two other versions of the same teaching, two lines from a body of teaching from India. So there's the statement, in a way, the most simple way would be to say, you are already free. It's like Seng San saying, do not seek for the truth, only cease to cherish opinions. You're already free. And then in the Yog Vashisht, my favorite book so far on earth that I found, it's in Sanskrit and my friend Ajay translates it for us. A woman who's doing her practice and entering these incredibly deep states, and then she's asked to sign a contract to stay in that deep state for as long as possible. It's like a commitment to, it's not just being in love with it and being called towards, I am already free, but a kind of commitment that happens. So a movement that happens in her. And then again, she's describing these states and it sounds like, oh, she's already free. But then she finishes that contract and another state comes and she signs the contract again. So the sense that there could be effort and commitment and even struggle, that doesn't mean there's anything wrong. It's not that spiritual work is the opposite of you are already free. That's the basic nutshell of that teaching line, you could say, from India that I wanted to include. To speak of the dove and the snake again a little bit more, with the dove, we could hear the part about, okay, be soft and edible. Don't hide that. And from the snaky point of view, it could be, fear not, because you will be provided. There will appear within range what is needed. But especially, I think, with this, the snaky part is to keep track in an experiential feeling way, which that exploration of the realm of touch really can help us track, not just mentally, but really experientially, what is it that keeps us steady through easy and hard, pretty and ugly. There is this snaky place or path or something that we can keep trusting, pretty, ugly, easy, hard, soft and fluffy, or hungry. And to be, I think that is, and it's interesting that this piece that I love of Tseng Tsan is called Verses of Faith Mind, or let's say Song About Trust, Trust Song, that it's called that, instead of verses on awakening or verses on truth or verses on non-duality or whatever. The kind of essential point to keep clear is, what is it that keeps me steady, or that keeps steady, that I can be steady with, or that steadies me, probably is the best way to say it. What is that that steadies me, no matter what happens? So including, what is it that steadies me, even when I'm having, let's say, meditation is going well, and there are deep contractions on folding, on knotting, whatever. There are deep places of peace unveiling. And me as I know it is gone. What steadies me in there as well, through that, and when that comes to an end and I haven't yet signed the next contract? And what steadies me that I don't think, oh, I'm already free, period, this is it. Instead of, I'm already free and this is the fact that this meditation can unfold this way is a sign of that, rather than the end of that story. Because when we are not like compulsively trying to find my benefit, which would be regular shrewdness, but where I am open that the nourishment that is needed will come and can be taken. Is given at the time, put it that way. The words are given at the time. The food is given at the time. The time is given at the time. The task is given at the time. The stretch is given at the time. The ease is given at the time. When that trust is even if it's small, we can feel its greatness. In the same way, like with the basic goodness, there could be the smallest piece of dirt, and we can feel the vastness. We can draw down the vastness into any perception. We can feel the greatness in the small trust. And therefore not have anything to sell or buy. Not be in the market for something. So I said there were four lines, but I've already given five because I included the Sangsan, and I have another line from Kabir. Saints, if I speak, who will believe it? If I lie, it passes for truth. I glimpsed a jewel, unpierced and priceless, without buyer or seller. Simple meditation, absolute stillness awakened. Simply, I met what is, which he calls Ram. Santon kahon to ko patiyai bhut kahet sanch ban ai leke ratan abed amolik nahi gahek nahi sai sahaj samadhi anamuni jage sahaj mile ragurai sahaj samadhi, she translates as simple meditation. Sahaj is could also be it could be translated as simplicity, or it could be translated as a kind of graceful, flowy ease, which is, to me, very much like dove and snake together. Sahaj samadhi, samadhi is where I'm not here. So the ease where I'm not here, sahaj samadhi. Anamuni jage, absolute stillness or silence, jage, awakened, reminds me of that when movement stops, there is no movement, and when no movement, there is no stopping. So a movement that, like, we're free to be moved, but we don't have an agenda to get things moving or something like that. Anamuni jage, sahaj mile ragurai. Simply I met Ram, or sahaj mile, I met ragurai. That's another word for Ram, or what is. So again, simply I met Ram, or you could say it's in that delicious ease, which is, it's not quite combination, but let's say combination of dove and snake. Like, when it's time to move, it's instantaneous. So another way of being dove, like entering through the dove but allowing the snake, would be to really notice our timing. As dove, some signal may come that something should, where we're being moved but we don't move. Go get a glass of water, or whatever, some kind of inner order or suggestion comes. And as dove, we might tend to put it off. Oh, well, I'm just going to stay all peaceful. I'm going to stay still, or whatever. So to allow ourselves to be moved instantaneously, so gradually practicing towards that, is one commitment that can happen. And then the ease can stay with us with practice. The ease or simplicity, or that it's a very flowy, refreshing fresh also carries the dove and the snake, a very fresh flow place, sahaj. So in the fresh flowy dove snake place, we meet what is, truth encounters us. Any comment or question? Or if you want me to read anything again.
Can you read all the sentences just there?
All the sentences. Well, the first was basic goodness. And the main sentence was drawing down the vastness in a single perception. And there was the image of the dead branch in the flower arrangement. Which is curious that I mentioned last time that the three horizons of heaven, earth, and the human, and the little tiny that I know about the art of flower arrangement is that you have those three. You have something that is heaven, something that is earth, and something that is the human. Trying to find where it's a flow to be matter and spirit, where it's a flow, where it's an ease, where it's not me being that, but already, like where we jump into already free, already the flow of encountering what is, or ceasing to cherish opinions. We don't have to seek for the truth. It's not like, don't seek for the truth. But there's no need, because already it encounters us when the opinions are not dominant, when the talking thinking is not dominant. So basic goodness and drawing down the power of vastness in a single perception. And then the second was several really lines that starts with first shall be last, last shall be first. So that's where we're not buying and selling. And we can have the confidence that we don't need to enter the market because there is Kabir's jewel that's priceless and unpierced. There is this flawlessness in, so the basic goodness, the flawlessness already is. Our potential already is, and in this moment, our contact with that is. So, but the main line was, shrewd as snakes, innocent as doves. And the context of that was Jesus was sending his students who were teachers as like sheep among wolves, like knowingly. Let's not pretend that everyone who's interested in spiritual teachings is only sheep or only dove or only wants the best for everyone. But we live and there are wolves. Know that there are wolves and there are sheep, and you are to go as sheep among wolves, and the trick is to be dove snake. Shrewd as snakes, innocent as doves. So we don't need to worry, we don't need to fear. Because first of all, what seems to happen that might seem like confirmation that I'm doing well, or that might seem like a bad sign that I'm not doing well, that none of that can be taken so directly and literally and simplistically as we take it. But it's only that if we stay with what steadies us, no matter what's going on, whether someone is like whipping us verbally or any other way, or whether someone is saying how great we are. And if we know that there are wolves, and that we are among wolves also inwardly, so not only they are wolves, but also inside there are wolves, we include it from the beginning. We start to trust that when it is time to say, we are given what to say. When it is time to eat, we are given what to eat. And what keeps us steady in that is what matters. It's really the only thing that matters. That would be the priceless jewel. So not fearing, because what will be given, what we need will be given, and we will be part of the giving as well, all around the place. But in that mode, like not to make it a dove mode, where we're kind of accidentally or unconsciously blocking the receptivity to what's needed. So when someone says, here's some food, we don't say, oh no, I ate yesterday, I'm a dove, I don't have needs. Like, oh cool, I might be hungry. And when a signal comes that is potentially, in our potential, is an initiation of a movement, we are moved. So it's not only about getting food, but it's being moved immediately. And not as a dove with some ideal of stillness or softness. Like when it needs to be like, no, it just is. And when it needs to be that no without any word no, it just needs to be the inner gesture, the energy no, also, it is. So there's not some loyalty to the idea of oneness. There is a loyalty to that which steadies us when there seem to be dualities. It steadies us with not duality or with what is, or and with this, the human possibility of through ease being in contact or being that, not two-ness. Another really just very basic and obvious part of the shrewdness of the snake is shrewdness looking through, seeing through our own laziness and having the question, what actually is laziness? So it's not only the literal, I don't like to get up in the morning or whatever, or it'll be so boring to go to the meditation hall or whatever. But to really notice what is our laziness, what is it that the dove uses that softness as a chance to escape from the challenge. And then the snake, who maybe is more like the love of challenge. And then the last part was about you are already free. And by being in the flow of what is already free, there can come this movement where we sign a contract with the deep state, with our practice, with this phase of our practice that's happening now. And not to have some idea that because I had a deep meditation, that was already being free. That some experience means already being free, but some experiences come as part of the fact that there is some part of us that has potential freedom, if you like, or that is already free. But that already freeness loves to sign the contract with our appropriate practice. And then I read the Kabir saying, if I speak, who will believe? If I lie, it passes for truth. I glimpsed a jewel, unpierced and priceless, without buyer or seller. Meditation in ease. Anamuni, like silence before the silence, awake. That ease brought me to what is. And then when movement stops, there is no movement, and when no movement, there is no stopping. When such dualities cease to exist, oneness itself cannot exist. So there's not the duality of duality and oneness. I love this. We want to say, oh, duality is bad, so oneness is good. And the fact is that there's not either of those dualities. To this ultimate state, no law or description applies. So from the deepest place, we can realize that we can realize how often description is pointless, and therefore cultivate the power of description less and cultivate other powers more, like snake dove powers, basic goodness powers, and that ease, fresh flow, sahaj, that loves to sign contracts. So it's ease and it loves to sign a contract. It's not against commitment. Any other question or comment? We're not on the radio. I should hang up the phone, actually. Hello? Goodbye. Maybe the phone died or what? Okay.
When I think he says when I tell the truth, who will believe me? And when I
Kabir.
Oh, Kabir.
Yeah.
Okay. When he says, when I lie, I can't quite remember what he said.
He says, if I speak, who will believe it? He doesn't even say, does he? He doesn't even say, if I speak the truth. If I speak, I mean, like, if I really speak, who will believe it? If I lie, it passes for truth.
Yeah. What does that mean?
I think it means the same as cease to cherish opinions, or when we have a really good opinion, people really want to hear it. And when we say, I don't know. Like, I remember giving, not to say that I'm great for doing this, but I gave a Dharma talk, the first Dharma talk of a retreat in Europe last summer. And it was the first talk, and there were several people around in the center who weren't on the retreat, but who had a lot of years of meditation experience, who were teachers themselves or whatever. And several of them came to the talk, and I remember that the main point of my talk was that I don't know anything. And I saw them all kind of like, and then they didn't come to any other talks. It was like, you're supposed to know something if you're giving a Dharma talk, aren't you?
Don't you think that this line of Kabir means that the truth is unspeakable, and when you speak about it, then people believe what you're saying, but you're not actually speaking the truth.
Also, but then because he goes on to sing the rest of the song, he's not just advocating don't speak about the truth. Mm. He's saying that it's really hard to let words be helpful. And I could lie and people would really be excited about it. If I lie, it passes for truth. Mm. But then he says his truth, I glimpsed a jewel. That's without any fault and impossible to give a price. Nahi gahak nahi sai. There's no, without customer, I could say. And without owner, maybe is more how I would say today. So, but I want to just point out that what you're saying is very similar. Like, to say that he might be saying we can't talk about the truth, or to say that he might be saying we want to hear someone who thinks they know the truth. Mm. It goes together. That it's hard to use words and hard to take words in a helpful way, but he's still doing it. He doesn't stop himself. He doesn't stop that movement that keeps happening, even though it doesn't make sense. And it's so tempting to use words in a way that's not helpful. And it's so tempting to get into the power play of opinion and description. And it's so easy for that opinion and description to actually be the end of our possibility of being in contact with what we actually need. So it's what you're saying and what it goes together. Kind of.
Mm. And yeah, the other thing, when you said the first should be last and the last should be first, what you were talking about, the marketplace, is that what is meant
and
by,
the snake.
By this sentence?
To me, it's like if in the normal way that I'm trained that I should, that what appears to be profitable to me is profitable, is another way to say. And what appears to be unprofitable to me is unprofitable. If I believe that, then I'm not going anywhere spiritually. Because not everyone, some people have the opposite tendency, like they see what would be good for them and they self-sabotage as their compulsion. Or all of us do that in some way. So I don't agree to just say only, like the first shall be last and the last shall be first. But if we enter and are used by that mindset that what looks profitable is profitable, and we orient our whole lives around that, then we're going to lose out. We actually lose out. On the most important thing in life. And then what Jesus says later, like the next line or two, I don't know exactly if it's the next line or two lines later. So, he says that when there is that heart of service, he says, then we will, whatever he said, get the kingdom of heaven. But of course, we could be fake serving. But if there's really the movement of service to life, then we're on track. Like, if we're really honest, like, not loyal to the idea of what looks like serving, we have to always spell it out, because we'll so easily pretend to serve, because then we'll get nothing. Which is wanting to be first through pretending to be looking like I'm being last.
It's funny, because I always thought this. I mean, I don't have any Christian education at all, but I had heard this, and I thought it was the same as, I don't know it in English, what was in your song in our plan? The ones that have nothing have everything. I thought it meant
does.
That.
There is also, he also says,
that all but the stupid, you know, the crazy, or
yeah,
whatever, have
the Beatitudes. Yeah. There's a, he also says, let's see, I was trying to find it in Gemma's Catalan Bible, so it's coming, mixture of, if you're hungry now, you will be fed later. And I personally think that time frame is sometimes true and sometimes not true. Like, sometimes it's the fact of, like, okay, I'm hungry now, but I don't take that personally as a sign that I've done something wrong or that someone else has done something wrong. I can feel the basic goodness of the sensation of hunger, for example, and stay with what steadies me even when I'm hungry, which is including a confidence in life that unless it's time for this body to die, some food's going to come. And it could be time for the body to die, and that's going to be also graceful and flowy and fresh. Or it could be that some food comes, and I may or may not like it, but it'll be that time that it's given, and that's the food. And I mean, not to make now it sounds like a great ideal to be superhumanly. But anyway, to stay with what steadies us, even if I'm hungry, and I don't see any food yet. When the azuki beans were not getting ready yet for lunch. Not the first time, not the last. In Mexico, we had a retreat at high altitude, and it was a professional cook cooking. But he could not believe how long things were taking to cook, because things boil so much at such a lower temperature at high altitude. And lunch was like every day 2 hours late, 2 hours late. Anyway, so don't worry about it.
But with the food and eating, could it also be the barren moments in spiritual experience?
Definitely. So what steadies us in the barren moment, at the same time, will not try to make it be a barren moment, when all I need to do is that one little gesture that my inner spiritual guidance has been encouraging me to do for 3 months, and I'm avoiding. Like, that's what this fresh place that actually steadies us can be. Steady when it's barren, and it's just barren, which means it's winter time or whatever. Or if it's barren because I didn't water. Come on, water. Thirsty plants, thirsty water. Hose. Whatever. And because we could easily then have the drama that now is my barren moment, and this is steadying me, and all it is my laziness that's pretending to steady me, making a pretend steadiness.
It's quite...
No, finish, go ahead.
It's quite... it feels like it's always this balance of, okay, it's just a feeling, I can't word it yet.
Okay, so keep feeling, and if you have words then, because it's good. Good grapes are coming. Mary Lee?
Well, lots of things, but... No, I was just thinking of saying about the steadiness. You just have to find for yourself what steadies you.
I'm suggesting that what steadies us is trust.
Yeah.
And it's trust that doesn't believe when we start to do a little story of, now I'm studying myself and this is just a barren moment instead of actually I'm being lazy. Like it's very, there's honesty. So I don't know if it's just trust or trust in something that's not a thing. Like it's very sneaky and very soft. Like we can't, it's so soft that we can't grab it and it's so snaky we can't grab it. But we can kind of ride it or whatever, that sahaj, we can be in that flow. That
but it's really hard, no, to discern that sometimes.
Totally.
That's a little bit what I feel like on this retreat. It's like, am I actually being totally lazy and just lying around?
Yeah.
Because I haven't actually got down to kind of meditating yet, or is it just that I'm just, this is what I need to do, you know?
Yeah.
And it's going to come, it's going to come.
Yeah.
And I'll put the effort when I need to put the effort. Yeah. In the meantime, it's okay.
Yeah.
Or is that the dove baby one?
Yeah.
Doing a contract and actually to know it's, it's not so easy.
Yeah. I just want to make sure that. Yeah. Well, good, exactly. So I think that's the part of the effort is not to go to the head about it. Except when, by coming down and down and down again and again and again to some other place of another kind of knowing or trusting, we get some little flash of a signal that's like, this sounds and smells kind of fishy or familiar, like, And then it might be good to actually have a logical framework of, oh yeah, this reminds me of that other retreat or that other time in my life where it was avoidance and what was really helpful was to make myself get up in the morning or whatever. But when those signals aren't coming, then the trust, it is the practice to come out of the head and stay down, I would say, with trusting. That would be like, cease to cherish opinion, etc. And you are in contact with the truth. And I just want to double check that I wasn't sure when you said about the dove and the contract. I was saying the dove that signs the contract as a very positive thing.
Mm.
Okay. And I wasn't sure when you said that,
yeah,
if you meant,
no,
okay.
I haven't taken it like
that. Okay, so what I meant was there's the softness and the ease. So where it would be signing a contract with not knowing what I'm doing and just lying around until, and resting until further notice, kind of. But letting that be a commitment in a way, like, a commitment with trust in yourself and life, kind of. That you'll get the signal if this is not true. Yeah. I feel very clear that you will get the signal if there is one.
Yeah.
So I'm here to help you. Like, you can believe me or not, or maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I see in you. And I know from many people's experience that can be, the hardest thing can be to, not for everyone, but to lie around, not knowing what's happening.
Yeah, it is that, it's almost like the flash is there, is that I know that I have, that trust is there, and then that, there's just a minor questions every now and again, but maybe, maybe not, you know?
Yeah.
And it's whether that's an awake, helpful mind or not, you know?
Well, the way you're describing it doesn't sound helpful. It sounds like the practice that's helpful is not listening to that.
Yeah.
And to even actively disconnect from that and come down. And that makes all the difference in the world. If I know that that is my practice right now, that really makes a difference in what happens when you're seemingly doing nothing. One more? Anybody? Did you raise your hand?
I don't know. Well,
okay.
I,
didn't I didn't know if it was a fly or a question.
We were talking about maybe there were moments of barrenness or like the food, if you say it's spiritual food or whatever, it might be here. At this point, and then gone. This other point, I was just thinking about how I see my life is going to be very different when I leave the retreat and when I am here. And I was thinking maybe, you know, is that part of the practice, like feeling that when I'm home, maybe the food will be there, or I'm just not sure how to approach that, but maybe
the idea is that because you're alive, the food will be there until it's time to die. Mm-hmm. And even when you die, that the more important food is still there. Mm-hmm. And by being in touch with that our whole lives, then the passage of death is not death in the same way. And we could feel that the fearlessness of the fear dove, the dove snake, that could have the passage of death even without a blink of the eye, mm-hmm. when it's time, which it someday will be. I wasn't sure if we'd actually finished with what you were saying. Was it complete or?
I think that's what seems to happen is I hear the words and then I forget them, but I think they've gone in.
Mm.
So I see what happens.
Yeah.
Great. If I've got any questions on.
Great.
But there is that process of
things
going in and then instantly being forgotten.
Yeah.
And
so
I'll reflect. Because there were lots of questions.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Okay. Thank you for being here.